Hello, hello everyone. A very warm welcome to the Peace Alliance National Monthly Call for the month of November. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's really a pleasure to be with you all, and I'm extremely grateful that you've joined us. I always think our calls are very special. I seem to want to say we have a very special call every month, and this is no exception. I'm really excited about our special guest and about our topic tonight. We'll be talking about restorative justice, policymaking, and the rise of restorative justice, particularly in Colorado. And our special guest is going to be Congressman Pete Lee, who will be introduced in just a moment in greater depth. First, let me just give you a brief overview of the agenda. So I'm going to introduce Patty LaTaille, who is our council lead for humanizing justice systems, and then she's going to introduce you to Pete. Pete's going to talk for about 10 minutes, and then we'll have about 15 minutes for questions for Pete. So we'll take questions from you all, and Pete will engage in some discussion. After that, we'll have some coaching on the monthly action. Now, all of you should have a monthly action sheet in your email inbox that I've sent to everyone who was registered for the call about a half an hour ago. So please take a moment in the next 5 minutes or so to check your inbox and get a look at that monthly action sheet, along with a fact sheet that I also sent some supporting information to help you take this action. So we'll have a little look at that action sheet and go over it. We'll have some question time. We're going to have a report after that from Nancy Merritt of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. We've got one or two announcements. And then we want to hear shares from the field, from folks who are out there building peace, working on policy, working on coalition building, alliance making all around the country. So looking forward to that as well. And I also want to give a special welcome. I know there are some folks on the call tonight who are members of a thing called RJNet. And RJNet is a nationwide network of restorative justice coalitions and associations. So these are folks who are probably with us for the first time tonight. I want to especially welcome you all to the Peace Alliance National Call for November. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to our wonderful and highly esteemed Council Lead for Humanizing Justice Systems, Patty LaTaille, who's a wonderful restorative justice practitioner and pioneer in her own right, so that she can introduce our special guest for tonight. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Dan. Hi, everyone. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and share this momentous occasion, because it is with great gratitude and pleasure that I am honored to introduce Democratic Representative Pete Lee. He's a staunch leader and supporter of restorative justice in Colorado. We actually have a local connection in Salida, Colorado. Pete once lived here and was a ski instructor at Monarch Mountain. And due to that connection, he has been to Salida and supported Full Circle Restorative Justice, of which I was a director of. And together with his wife, Lynn, who is an amazingly skilled and experienced RJ facilitator and trainer, the Lees lead the way in creating a kinder, more just, criminal justice system in Colorado. And a little bit more about Pete. He is a force of restorative justice nature. He has sponsored legislation to transform our criminal justice system from one of retribution to one of restoration and rehabilitation. He is forthright and honest, in addition to being accessible to tirelessly support RJ programs and efforts in the state. He has served 4 terms in the Colorado House and is currently running for the Colorado Senate. Yay! He is a state representative for Colorado House District 18. He has been a lawyer, a small business owner, and an executive at a NYSE-listed corporation. He and his wife, Lynn, have lived in Colorado Springs for 40 years, and he has a background degree, double major in English and politics and government, and then he has also studied economics and earned his Juris Doctor degree at the University of Akron Law School in 1975. So we are thrilled to welcome Representative Pete Lee to the call. Thanks, Pete, for being here.
Patty, it's a delight to join you. I very much appreciate the work that you are doing over there in Salida. It's one of the great RJ programs in Colorado, and we look forward to continued expansion in jurisdictions all over the state. So thanks for your efforts.
Well, thank you. So, Pete, we were hoping to discuss and share with our fellow callers in regards to legislation. Basically, Colorado leads the nation in having our legislation in place, and you were pivotal in, you know, approaching this and actually sponsoring the bills. Would you be willing to kind of step back in time and just give us a brief overview on how that all evolved, please?
Sure. I'd be happy to. The first bill I introduced in my first term when I got to the legislature in 2011, and it was really an omnibus restorative justice bill to put restorative justice into the juvenile code, into the adult code, into the Department of Corrections, into the Division of Youth Corrections, and then made it a recommended option for schools. We had previously set up in Colorado a statewide restorative justice council consisting of stakeholders from many, many disciplines of juvenile justice and adult justice and education, human services, parole and probation. So that statewide restorative justice council basically provides a clearinghouse for services and advises and helps jurisdictions around the state that want to set up those programs. And then 2 years later, we set up some pilot programs around the state and implemented a fee, a $10 fee on criminal cases in Colorado to raise money for restorative justice pilot programs around the state and to fund the effort. And I think Colorado is still the only state that has a statewide restorative justice council and a dedicated funding stream for restorative justice. And then significantly in 2013, we set up pilot programs around the state, four of them, which were pre-filing diversion. So kids in those four jurisdictions were referred to restorative justice before charges were filed. And then if they successfully completed the process by meeting with their victim in a victim-offender dialogue, agreeing to a plan to repair the harm that was done, and then completing all the terms of that plan, they would have their case dismissed. So no charges would exist on the record, and it was terrifically successful. There were some 700 kids who got diverted into the restorative justice process, and 92% of them successfully completed it. And then 2 years later, the rearrest recidivism rate was around 8%. So what we demonstrated was that restorative justice can keep kids out of the criminal justice system and teach them values so that they will not reoffend. So I'm really pleased with that pilot program.
Right.
So that's pretty
and
much
then,
an overview.
And also, could you speak to working with the district attorneys and how all the stakeholders came together? Because the individuals who are calling in really would like to know how they can put some of these ideas and, you know, move forward perhaps with legislation in their states and how to, you know, start the grassroots movement and make this happen.
Sure, and that's really an important process, is to get all the stakeholders who are potentially interested in a room talking about restorative justice and how it could benefit their system. And you really need to get the prosecutors involved and the defense lawyers involved and the probation people involved, as well as people who are very knowledgeable and experienced about restorative justice. You really need to have practitioners who are in a position to take on the cases that are referred to the, that are referred out of the criminal justice system. But it's really important to get a stakeholder group together to talk about exactly what you want to accomplish and then to get some guidance on, you know, what people are going to be agreeable to. What we did here in Colorado was to start with kids. But I find that because kids, everyone's willing to work with kids. But I think it's important also to try to set up programs where restorative justice is available for adults as well. You know, what we find is that the greater the harm that occurred, the greater opportunity for repair of that harm. So that would be the next step, Patty, is to convene stakeholder groups of, all the potential players.
Right, right. Super important. And then if we can just step to the DOC, the Department of Corrections funding that you were able to kind of sponsor or push forward in regards to what I consider is the hardcore RJ cases, working with adults in the Department of Corrections. And can you speak to that? Because that's kind of, I would think, what individuals who picture RJ, you know, at least the publicized, highly publicized cases, victim and offender conferences, and, the really awesome results and transformational experiences that victims and offenders both experience.
Right, and that was all part of the original bill, and quite candidly, it was attributable to and acknowledged as a possibility by a visionary leader of the Colorado Department of Corrections, Tom Clements. He had come to Colorado from Missouri, and he had some familiarity with victim-offender dialogues. So he was brand new to Colorado, and I approached him. He had not even actually been had his appointment ratified by the Senate, but I met him and talked to him about implementing a pilot program in the Department of Corrections, and he was agreeable to doing it. We had to ensure that there was some funding capability and that the project would be studied along the way, because we were basically, writing the policies as we did it. You know, what they were concerned about is they wanted to make sure that they had appropriate victims and appropriate offenders. They wanted to ensure that if a victim was meeting with someone who had harmed their child or family member, that harm would not have occurred again. So they wanted to make sure that the offenders had a good record in the Department of Corrections. So we picked one case, which was a highly publicized case of a mom whose baby, 3-year-old baby, had been killed in a drive-by shooting by 2 16-year-old boys, and they both had received life sentences without the possibility of parole, and it was 18, 20 years later, they were in their, middle 30s, and so there were a lot of meetings set up between the victim and the offenders, and the offenders actually had made remarkable changes in their lives while being in the Department of Corrections. One was out at a high security prison because of his severity of his crime, but he had become literate. He had taken behavioral classes. He had taken the cognitive behavioral class. He was a instructor for a Thinking for a Change and for the Seven Habits class within the Department of Corrections. So he was, you know, if you can use the word model prisoner, he was one of those guys who had really made the best of his time in the department. He had not had write-ups for 3 years. He was living in an honor pod. Though it was a high-security prison, he had some degree of freedom. And then the facilitators met with the with him on probably 4, 5, 6, 7 hours over a 2 or 3 day period to, you know, find out what his approach would be, how he would respond to questions that would be posed to him by the mom, and they wanted to make sure that everything was, you know, going to go as well as could be done. But it was really the receptiveness of the department to doing it, and they agreed to do 4 cases, and I think at this point there have been 14 cases in the Department of Corrections, every one of which has had very, very satisfactory results for both victims and the offenders.
Yes, and thank you. Did you want to comment on the successful outcome of that one case you were describing, Pete?
What are you referring to specifically?
The one with Kaysen, the young son who was killed,
okay.
And the mother who, yeah.
Yeah, her comments were after the case was concluded. She's talked about it on a number of occasions in various forums, and I think the really compelling and defining comment that she made at one presentation was before the conference was held, all I could think about was my son's death. After the conference, I can now think about my son's life. In fact, what she did during that conference, which lasted 8 hours in the Department of Corrections, she spent a lot of time talking with the young man about what her son was like and communicating with him what he was like as a three-year-old baby crawling around her kitchen and the life that she had with him. And that's what she needed to communicate to the young man who had killed him. But for her, it's been an absolutely transformative experience, and she has taken that experience to a higher level, and she now goes around the country advocating for more humane treatment for young offenders, particularly offenders who are serving life sentences. It's become almost a mission of hers to try to get some opportunity for freedom for some of these young men. She believes very strongly in redemption, and that through good works, people can absolutely change, and she has seen it happen. So it's pretty remarkable.
Right, right, definitely. And just to clarify for our callers, victim-initiated conferencing is the only acceptable initiative when it's DOC-related, correct?
That's right, and that was part of the original discussions of the bill was how do we initiate these processes, and the victims were very concerned that if inmates initiated the process that they might have ulterior motives and that it could result in re-victimization of the victims. So it's statutorily stated that all victim offender dialogues in the Department of Corrections have to be initiated by the victim, and the victims have to the offender then has to be vetted very carefully to ensure that he is appropriate for the process as well.
Right. Thank you, Pete. Really appreciate your insight and sharing that those stories. I think, Dan, just I'm thinking the time-wise, we're ready to take questions from the field. Is that correct, Dan?
Yes, please. And we've got Lori on the dashboard, Lori Draper, our amazing administrative executive. If folks who have a question for Pete can press 1 on your telephone keypad, and Lori will see that as a raised hand, and she'll call on you. So again, just press 1 on your phone keypad, and Lori will see those hands go up, and then she'll call on you. We really appreciate you being with us, Pete. And I want to remind callers while the hands are going up, this call is being recorded, and there was a lot that was shared that I think I want to listen to again and share with other people. And the recording of this call will be sent to everyone who registered for the call. So you'll be able to listen to that within a few days and share that with other people in your network who might be excited to hear what Pete has brought to the table. So Lori, do we have some hands up?
We do, and we have Margaret. Margaret Corrin, your mic is live.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Pete Lee. You've been my hero for some time, and I'm just overwhelmed by what you did. We're writing things for the Party Platform here in California, and restorative justice is very high on our list, a real priority. And we write the testimony, and then we give examples of what you're doing. And so what I'd like to know is, what was the HR number of your bill?
The first bill was House Bill 11-1032.
And that was on 2011.
2011. There was another one prior to it, which I believe was in 09, and that was HB 09-1117, and I think that was the one that may have set up the council. But if you communicate with me directly, I can give you a summary of all, I think, 5 or 6 bills that we've passed in Colorado. I've got just a 4-page sheet. So if you email me, I'll send that to you.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I'd like that. I also want to send the information to a deputy sheriff I heard recently who's running for office. And he went to a circle, and I actually spoke to him. We went to the same circle, and he was, oh, what a waste of time. I don't know what I'm doing here, and da-da-da-da-da. And we had a 3-hour circle, and afterwards he made a 180 degree. And now he's running for office, and I really, really want him to hear you. He's a young man, and he's great, and I'd love him to hear you. So I'm glad
that
we can send a link.
Yeah, I think what makes people into advocates is just what you described, is actually participating in one of those victim offender dialogues. You can't really get it fully comprehended until you participate in it and hear the offender take responsibility for what they did and hear the victim describe the impact on them by the offense. And then the offender at that point typically develops empathy and ownership. And it's just amazingly powerful. So participating in a conference is really a way to get someone to become a zealous advocate. My email, the easiest email to get me at is reppete@gmail.com. reppete@gmail.com. And if you ask, I'll happy to send you that.
Wonderful. Could you repeat it again, please?
reppete@gmail.com. So it's a contraction of rep, like representative, and then my first name, Pete.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, Lori, got some other hands raised?
Yes, we do, Dan. We have our own Terry Mason has a question.
Hi.
Hi there.
Representative Lee, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. I actually have two questions. The first one is to support any of our callers who might not be familiar with restorative justice. I know we have a fairly educated crowd, but just in case there are some here who really are new to the subject, I wonder if you could give a quick comparison of the difference between traditional justice and restorative justice. And my second question has to do with the cost-benefit analysis, because my understanding is that restorative justice is tremendously cost-beneficial versus the traditional justice system.
Sure. I think the easiest way to explain the differences is that the conventional criminal justice system is punitive and retributive, meaning it's based on punishment. So the question you ask in the typical criminal justice system is, what is the offense that occurred and who did it and what's the penalty for the offense? And the penalty is usually a prescriptive penalty. In restorative justice, on the other hand, the question is asked is, what harm has occurred and how do you repair the harm? So restorative justice is the process which enables victims and offenders to get together to repair the harm arising out of an offense. And the process is typically done through a facilitated face-to-face dialogue attended by victims and offenders with a trained facilitator. And after the offender is typically pre-screened to determine if he's accountable for what he did. If he's not accountable for what he did, he's not suitable for the process. He has to have some degree of contrition, and he has to be willing to do something to repair the harm. So if an offender meets those three criteria, they are suitable. We always try to get the victim to participate because they're the only ones who can really explain in detail what occurred. But if a victim doesn't want to attend, we often will use a victim advocate or a victim surrogate who will talk to the victim and find out what they want out of the process. And then the second part of the conference is to develop a plan to repair the harm written in the form of an agreement, and then that agreement has to be completed and monitored by the facilitator. So that's pretty much the process. The cost-benefit analysis is, the cost for restorative justice is, in Colorado, we set it up so that and I don't like this very much, but that the offender pays a fee both for the pre-conference and for the conference. And that was because in the year we passed the bill, there wasn't any money in the legislative bank account, so we couldn't have a cost. So that's the way we set it up. But typically facilitators do those cases for anywhere from 250 to 500, and they may take 3-4 hours to do, including the monitoring. When you think about the cost of a criminal justice system, an offender typically, makes 3, 4, 5 appearances in court with bailiffs and judges and sheriffs and stenographers, and then they have to set up probation and parole plans. I hate to do this, but I'm in an airport and my plane is getting ready to board, so I apologize, but I got to pull the plug and fly home.
That's fine, Pete. We really appreciate you fitting us in and making this call so informative. And thank you ever so much for coming.
Well, thanks,
through.
Patty, and thanks, Dan, and thanks to the callers. And again, I'm happy to do this again or provide any further information through email or my website. But thanks very much.
Thank you, Pete.
Terrific,
Safe
Pete.
Travels.
Okay, thanks. Bye, Dan.
Bye.
Take good care. All right. What a treat. So, Folks who didn't know that we have a champion in Colorado named Pete Lee, now you know. If you're a fan of restorative practices, we have Pete Lee in our corner. So I want to bring folks' attention to, as I mentioned, the action sheet that was sent to folks about an hour ago, along with the fact sheet. This is basically some suggestions for moving restorative practices forward in your state, and particularly bringing it to the attention of your legislators. So if anybody has that action sheet in front of them currently, there's two forms. There's a fact sheet and there's an action sheet. If you have the action sheet in front of you, and Lori, maybe you could clear all the hands so that all those hands that were raised for questions can go down. If you're willing to read some from that action sheet for us, raise your hand so we can have another voice on the call and we can sort of look it over together. Anybody who's willing to read aloud from this action sheet so that we can kind of go through it together. Any hands going up, Lori?
We do have a volunteer, Tara. Thank you.
Terrific. Hi, Tara. Thanks for volunteering.
Oh, hang on a second. Let me get your mic live. There you go, Tara.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah, you're fine.
Great.
So we go ahead and it's not very long. Will you just read that whole front page of the action sheet for us?
Sure. Peace Alliance Action Sheet, November 2017. Promote the growth of restorative justice practices in your state. A, via your elected legislators. 1, Google. 2, are my state representatives. 2, reach out to them via phone or email and let them know you'd like to see more promotion of restorative justice practices in both school discipline policies and in criminal justice policies. 3, share with them the definition and fact sheet we are providing, see page 2. For extra credit, 4, for extra credit, continue the conversation over many months. Find out their views on the subject, do more research, and become a trusted and well-informed advisor. B, via the professional media. 1, find an article in your local newspaper focusing on crime or violence. 2, write and send a letter to the editor responding to that article and promoting a restorative approach. In your letter, cite some of the information on the fact sheet, see page 2. C, via alliance building. 1, if you are aware of RJ programs or coalitions near you, reach out to them and find out how you might support their efforts. 2, if you are not aware of such programs or coalitions, write to patty@peacealliance.org or dan@peacealliance.org and see if we can direct you to any programs in your area.
Fantastic. Thank you. You're on the staff. You're hired. That's, I think, pretty self-explanatory. It's about starting a conversation with your legislators or raising this conversation in the media and or connecting with folks in your area that may already be working on this and find out what their priorities are, see how you can help. I mentioned earlier that there are folks on the call who are members of RJNet and so are part of coalitions or associations around the country. So if you are curious, if you don't know if there's a coalition near you, if you don't know if your state has a restorative justice association or coalition, please email me and let me know where you live, dan@peacealliance.org, and I will let you know if there's anybody in RJNet's network who is in your area, and you can connect with those folks and start that ball rolling. And on the second page, the fact sheet, you'll find two things. One is a definition of restorative justice practices that was, you know, a definition that was agreed upon by the Peace Alliance and the National Association for Community and Restorative Justice, NACRJ.org. And there also are several sort of sample statistics that give you a couple of really strong statistics of cost savings and violence reduction in restorative practices compared to more traditional practices. So I'm curious if anybody has questions about this action, if anybody has thoughts, if you're excited to do this. While you're thinking about it or possibly raising your hand, I'll say people are at various points in terms of their awareness of restorative practices, and there may or may not be a bill in your state legislature right now to promote it, but your state representatives are there to represent your interests in the legislature. So if you want to bring this to their attention and say, this is something I've learned about, or it's something I'm a practitioner of, whatever your level of expertise is, if you've got some enthusiasm for it, you can bring it to their attention and see what their opinion is. See if it's something that catches their interest. Started buzzing in their ears. So do we have any hands raised, Lori, about this action or about the fact sheet or anything like that?
We have Nancy Merritt. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question, especially relating to the elected officials portion. And since we have some RJNet people on the call, is there a place you can readily find a summary of restorative justice legislation in your state that's either already been passed or in process? And I know probably NACRJ, but any other suggestions?
There is what I think would be called a compendium. And when you say restorative justice legislation, that takes many forms, right? Because restorative justice practices, it can be, you know, community circle conferences, victim offender dialogues, various kinds of restorative practices or restorative discipline. So there is what I'm aware of is a compendium or catalog of references throughout various state codes. That was compiled by a professor in Southern Georgia. I think it may be Southern Georgia State University, if I'm not mistaken. The most recently updated one that I'm aware of is about 5 years old. So I can supply that to you. And some of it's pretty, you'll see references to restorative practices that are kind of buried in codes that I don't know how much they get enforced, how much they get taken advantage of. And I don't know how, if it's up to date enough to be significantly useful, but that's all that I'm aware of. If anybody else is aware of something beyond what I just mentioned, maybe you could press 2 on your keypad so that we get your voice on the call with an answer to that. If you know of a catalog or a compilation of restorative justice legislation that has been passed in states throughout the country, and you can add your voice to this conversation, please press 2 so we can hear what you know. Any 2s going up, Lori?
I do. Oh, let's see. We've got Jonathan. Your mic is live.
Hey, hi. So something we've been working on, so I direct Restorative Justice Project at the law school in Wisconsin, and something that we have been working on, so we started with that compilation, and we've been sort of doing, again, sort of further searches around that. So I'm happy to provide what, if someone has a particular state that they're curious about, I'm happy to provide anything additional that we may have found, because we've tried to look at assembly bills, pending legislation that didn't make it, as we're sort of want to be in this process of, moving in that direction of trying to, prepare and draft model legislation. So we've been looking all over the country at that. So if there are particular things, feel free to reach out to me or figure out some way to connect with me. But I'm at the University of Wisconsin Law School.
How do
Great.
We connect?
Yeah, is there an email address you'd be willing to share,
sure,
Jonathan?
Sure. So yeah. So it's just my first name, Jonathan, JonathanJohnSharrer@wisc.edu.
All right. I got Jonathan.SCHARRER@wisc.edu.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Terrific. Well, thanks for that. That's exciting. I want to be in touch with you myself. Any other number twos on the switchboard, Lori?
No, I do not see any others, Dan.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm glad that came up. Nancy, did you have something else? Was that it for now?
Pardon me?
Did you have another question, or was that all for now?
No, that was it. I mean, I'm in California, so of course interested in information on our state.
Any other hands raised, Lori, for questions about the action or other questions?
No, I do not see any other questions.
Okay, well, let's segue in that case. You can put hands down and see what comes up. We had two things we wanted to make little announcements about before we go into the Department of Peacebuilding update. One is about the web store. So I'm going to turn it over to Lori to give a little report about the web store where there's a Peace Alliance swag waiting for you. Go ahead, Lori.
Oh, well, I just thought since it was so new and exciting, we should definitely put a little plug out there. But if you go to the homepage of our website, peacealliance.org, and you'll see the very first thing on there is our new Christmas cards that we have for sale. And right under that, it says web store. And if you click on that, you can see an array of sweatshirts and T-shirts and bags and pins and buttons. And I just wanted to share that I have been getting some excited folks. I answer the general emails for the organizations, and one man said, I want to be a billboard for peace. I says, I'm going to buy one of these for everyone in my family in all different colors. So he was pretty excited about it. And you will be too when you go out there and look.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you. Super. Yeah, so there might be some gift-giving holiday times coming up. Get some Peace Alliance stuff for you and your beloveds. And one other thing I wanted to mention, while we're talking about money, because it takes money to buy this stuff, we're excited about what we do, the Peace Alliance, what we provide, what our mission is. If you've been with us for a little while, you may have noticed we're pretty dedicated to focusing on solutions, focusing on proactive approaches for resolving conflict, for building cooperation, for reducing violence, for reducing incarceration. So it thrills us, it moves us, and we hope it really serves you all too. And so I want to invite you to, if you're not already a monthly supporter, a monthly financial supporter, to consider going onto our website and becoming a monthly supporter so that you're contributing regularly to this movement, which really is where so many of us have chosen to put our energy and hope and time towards positive solutions. And if you're not feeling a monthly contribution, maybe a one-time contribution is where you're at. I've been with the Peace Alliance in one form or other since 2005, and it really fulfills something in me to connect with people in solidarity around positive ways forward, ways that try to take responsibility for our own inner turmoil and our own inner peace and our processes, and also look for solutions in the world that work and work together to bring those into effect. So that's my pitch and an invitation to really join us. And if you're already with us as a contributor, maybe consider increasing the level of your contribution just to add an exclamation point to your solidarity and enthusiasm for it. So there's that. And now over to Nancy for a report on the Department of Peacebuilding campaign. And just to mention, Nancy, there may be folks on the call who are brand new to us. So you may want to, I didn't prepare you with this, but you may want to spend 30 seconds or 45 seconds just saying what the Department of Peacebuilding bill is. What are we talking about here?
Okay.
So over to you.
Okay, thank you. So as most of you know, there's been a bill in Congress since 2001 calling for establishment of a cabinet-level Department of Peacebuilding. And it's the current incarnation of it is H.R. 1111. Barkley is the sponsor. Every year we go to Washington, D.C. In the fall to lobby for that bill, and this year we just got back, and it was in early October. We talked about this a little on our other call, on a call before, so if I'm repeating anything, please forgive me. We had a great time. We went to, I've crunched some of the numbers, about 128 offices of senators and congresspeople. We promoted not only the Department of Peacebuilding legislation, but House and Senate bills relating to restricting the first use of nuclear weapons, and House and Senate bills relating to the Elie Wiesel Genocide and Atrocities Prevention Act, and then House and Senate bills relating to getting a better system for bail than money, which obviously really impacts poor people more than others. So altogether, we promoted seven bills, and during the time, during our advocacy and up until I counted the numbers and our follow-up, which was on last Friday, we had 53 new co-sponsors for those seven bills. And of the 53, 40 of them we had visited. So to some degree or another, we like to think that we had some impact on those new co-sponsors. The good news, our main focus is the Department of Peacebuilding, and we now have 37 new co-sponsors. We got six new co-sponsors while in the process of doing this advocacy. So three of them at least told us right then and there when we were visiting in their offices that they would sign back on. So we now have Karen Bass from California, William Lacey Clay from Missouri, Dwight Evans from Pennsylvania, Pramila Jayapal from Washington, Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, and Nadia Velasquez from New York. We also took with us letters from high school students in San Diego and the city council president in San Diego, the bishop there, and several other community leaders wrote really poignant letters on why peacebuilding is so important and why a Department of Peace is so important. And a lot of them talked about they had never known peace in their lives and that they were faced with violence all the time, and just how having a Department of Peacebuilding would be really meaningful to them. We did have a lot of other stuff. We attended the budget discussions in Congress, and we had a lot of really great, amazing meetings with mostly with legislative aides, and ran into a lot of congresspeople in the halls. And I guess one thing that stood out is we went to John McCain's office and took him a thank you note for his vote that resulted in still in the Obamacare not being taken away. And it was probably the first time ever a peace group had gone to a Republican member of Congress with something like that, and they were quite taken aback and touched by that. So a lot of what we did was about making connections and laying the groundwork and getting new co-sponsors. And those are some of the highlights. I don't know if we have time later if others want to add to that, but those are just some of the highlights from our trip. And we really appreciate those who called in and amplified while we were there and amplified our message. And we hope as many of you as can will participate next year when we go. So, thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. So beautiful, really inspiring. Lori, I think I'm hearing background noise on somebody's phone. You can probably see who it is and maybe mute that line. Lori, can you mute that line?
I'm seeing if I can. I don't really know how to tell where it's coming from.
You'll see it. You'll see green. It'll be flashing green when the sounds come. Oh, there.
Did I get it?
I
got it.
Yep, you got it. Good job. Thanks. Mm-hmm. So amazing work, Nancy. Amazing work, all the folks in the committee and folks who are not on the committee that may have attended Lobby Days. And, so much about relationship building. And, I mean, actually people signed on the dotted line and co-sponsored as well. So it's building connection and also building political force and political momentum. And I want that to carry through to folks on the call who may be thinking about taking this action that we've outlined in our November action. If you don't know who your state representatives are, you can find out. I Googled that. I Googled who are my state representatives, and a link came up to help me connect with my Florida state representatives and with contact information and everything, and just start this conversation as a possibility. So even if you don't think you're going to do this today or tomorrow, my request is that you print out this action sheet, stick it on your fridge, and, you know, make a time when you might do it. Maybe say, I'm gonna do this in the next 2 weeks. I'm gonna reach out and have a conversation with somebody in my state legislature's offices about restorative practices. Just see where they're at. Let them know this is something exciting to me. Maybe they've never heard of it, or maybe they're already excited about it. But you will be tilling the soil for when someone like a Pete Lee comes along and has a conversation with your legislator and says, you know, have you heard of restorative practices? They'll say, oh yeah, one of my constituents talked to me about that, you know, or we started getting phone calls about that. So you're part of the equation. You can really be part of the solution just by taking this action. By a show of hands, let's see if, Lori, you can tell me percentages. How many people on the call think you are somewhat willing? You're somewhat willing to reach out to your state legislator, one of them, in the coming few weeks, to let them know that you care about restorative practices. That's just one of these items. So press 1 on your keypad if you are somewhat willing to make that contact, either by telephone or by email, just to let your state legislator know that this is an interest of yours and you'd like them to be aware. So what percentage of hands are going up, Lori, just so we can have some people get feedback on who else on the call is interested?
We have got 54% of the hands up.
Oh, all right. All right. That's pretty solid. Excellent. Excellent. That's an excellent start. So this is, you know, this is just your statement of willingness, and you can decide if this is something that you follow through on or not, but you know, anyone who's had conversations with legislative staff or with legislators will likely tell you that it's sort of eye-opening and empowering to recognize that this is a human process that we can participate in. We can educate them, and as the action sheet says, you can become their well-informed and trusted advisor if you stay up to date on what's going on and explore with them. This you can be a powerful mover in the world of building peace and changing justice systems. Okay, enough of my talk for right now, because I want to open up the lines for folks that might want to share what's going on in your part of the country, in your part of the world. If you have exciting events that you've created or are planning to create, if you've been building alliances with juvenile justice networks or with local court systems or with local schools, anything on your horizon, or in recent past that you want to share with folks in the field, this is your chance. Go ahead. I guess Lori put those other hands down. And now if there's something you want to share from your corner of the world, please press 1, and then Lori will call on you. Anybody who wants to tell us what's going on with you or ask a question about something else that was raised during the call, this is your time. Any hands going up, Lori?
Not yet. Okay, we have Peggy Hanna. Hi, Peggy.
Yay, Peggy Hanna.
Hey there. It's been a long time since I've talked to you guys.
has been a minute.
Yeah, it has. And we're hanging in there. We're Springfield, Ohio, for other listeners. I really wanted to know if Nancy, could you, either through email or whatever, send out the House bill numbers of the bills that you are all lobbying for? They just, each one of them is so important, and I really would like to, you know, share that down here and do some follow-up, too. Like
Hello?
Restricting the first use of nuclear weapons, the Genocide and Atrocities Act, you know, the bail thing. You
mm-hmm.
said you were promoting 7 bills, and I sure would like to know more about them. So I'm just thinking maybe you could send something out to more people, too.
Hello, hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you, Nancy. Yep.
Okay, so we will be sending out an e-blast with all this information in a few days, right, Dan?
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
But
okay,
if,
that's wonderful.
Okay, and, yeah, if we have time, I could go over those numbers now, but it will be
the
e-book.
No. Hey, I'm ready to go to bed. Come on.
You're ready to go to bed?
10 o'clock in Ohio, and I'm old. Okay.
You people in Ohio go to bed so early.
Well, the old ones do. Okay.
Don't believe
Thanks
it.
A lot.
I want to be old like Peggy's old.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Hey, Dan, I hope next year to be down there, you know, for lobbying days. You just never know.
Okay.
Sounds
All right.
Like you did a great job. Thanks so much. Okay.
Yeah,
Good
thank
night.
You, Peggy. Good night. Any other hands up, Lori?
Nancy had her hand up. I don't know if that was inadvertent.
It was not. It was Maggie touched on this a little bit, but in California we are going to the California Democratic Party Executive Board meeting this weekend and are in the process of submitting suggestions to the California Democratic Party 2018 platform. And have really suggested for almost every single plank, I think there are 22 planks, peace building and restorative justice related language. So we go for the hearings on Friday, and then the platform, there's another revision, and then they vote on the final platform in February, so it's an ongoing process, but our California team is working really hard on this.
Wonderful. That's so amazing. And for folks that may have interest, because Nancy and that team have navigated the party convention and the party platform maze over the last, 6 years, five, 6 years? For folks that want a little bit of a primer on doing that, can they just reach out to you, Nancy, at peacealliance.org to see, you know,
yes.
how do they get started if they want to create a party platform plank?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing piece of work. If you want to affect the platform of your state, Democratic or Republican Party or another party, it varies some state by state, as I understand, but Nancy and her team have really become scholars of the process in California, and so Nancy is a great resource to help you do that if you want to in your state.
And we do have one more hand up.
Okay.
And I know she's had it up for a while, Tara, so hopefully we can have time one more.
Sure, our great reader. Go ahead, Tara.
Where did you go, Tara? Oh, I lost her.
Did she drop off off the screen?
I don't see her now.
Okay. I guess she had to go.
Fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully she'll reach out to somebody with her question if she had a question. And it's the top of the hour, so I want to thank you all again for another very rich time together. And I think in about 10 seconds or 15 seconds, Lori's going to open up all the microphones so you can say goodnight to each other. And before that, I'll just share one of my favorite quotes for this group and in general, which is from Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." So happy dreams, everybody, and happy actions. And thanks for joining us, and good night.
Thank you.
Night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.